The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 and bizradio.co.uk on Tuesday the 26th of June. Thank you for joining us for the second part of the show. We've got two more good guests to talk to as the show unfolds. We're getting loads of tweets and loads of emails. I've just had an email from Sue Simpson at Care in Kent, and she says, good afternoon, can you say a big hello from the staff at Care in Kent from Ashford? She's also asked for a song request, but we don't do song requests because we don't really play songs. But a big hello to the lovely folks at Care in Kent in Ashford, and thank you for emailing us. I've also had an email from Sue Tappenden, and Sue's going to be on the show in a couple of weeks' time. Unfortunately, she's feeling a little poorly at the moment. She's got shingles, so she's just saying she was fascinated by your talk about networking earlier, but unfortunately, she's not been able to get out and about to any.
Oh, Sue. Well, yeah. Get well soon, and yeah. We're having another After Hours on the 13th of September.
Yeah, so she should be well by then.
So come to that one.
So we hope you get better soon, Sue, and thank you for contacting us. I've also had a tweet from the dining room, and they're asking a question, in case anyone knows. The dining room are at the stunning Cafton House this Thursday. Cathton, Cafton House. Has anyone been, as we hear amazing things about it? Anyone know the Cafton House? No, I don't. I don't know.
Never heard of it.
Well, let us know. That's Matt from the dining room. So do let us know, Matt and Gemma. Let us know how it goes and tell us about it. I don't even know where it is. No. Cool. Good. What you got?
Let's hope. Some other people do, but they're hoping to meet there.
Obviously. Well, no, the dining club is a group that meets over fine dining, and they have a membership base. So they have 20 people at each thing, and they pick a different place to dine every time. And this is a new one that they've tried, but they've got the people. It's just the location and the food. What you got?
Well, you interrupted me again earlier.
Yeah, well, that's my job.
I was trying to introduce Chris Surridge from Whitefish Marketing.
Who are you?
Who, there's a kind of theme going on here, because Brian and I and Chris, we're quite similarly built in
you're
terms
big,
of
you're
our stature.
Yeah.
And you used to be part of our club, but obviously...
I'm getting back there. I'm going to rejoin.
So Chris is at Grow Kent, funnily enough, in Maidstone today, and he's doing a digital masterclass. And he's talking about SEO.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a brilliant offer running at the moment where they will actually do a free SEO audit of your business, which is really interesting, actually, because they'll look at all sorts of things like meta tags and domain names and all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if you'd like to take advantage of that, Chris has got a limited offer running at the moment. And again, you'll find all of those details on our community page on Supply My Business. But... I was talking to him earlier about the fact that, you know, is organic SEO even worthwhile doing today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it seems to be dominated by paid search.
Yep.
And obviously what you want in an ideal world is a kind of combination of the two, ideally. So depending on budget and constraints.
It's one of those strange things, isn't it? With my business, we've been top of the searches for 19 years, and I've never done any SEO ever. Or paid searches. It's just one of those things, I think.
Well, I think
where you come.
The dynamic in the market now, though, is such that to get above anybody else in a highly competitive arena, if you're not already established, if you're a new business coming into the marketplace, I'd imagine that's quite difficult to achieve, as you've said, because there's so many established businesses already there.
Yeah, and it depends what business you're in as to how effective it is. You know, so many people do things without thinking it through. If you're in a type of business where you get a lot of your customers because they've searched for you, then yeah. But if you're in a kind of business where that's not really how it happens, then why bother to do it? You know, use social media or some other marketing method to attract new customers.
Yeah.
But people do things because everyone else does them, you know.
But if you're in a highly commoditized marketplace, then obviously you're going to have to do it.
If you've got an e-commerce site and you want to attract customers, then yeah, it makes sense, you know. If you're a if you're offering mentoring services or coaching, it really doesn't make any sense because people don't search for things like that in that way.
Horses for courses.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I've had a tweet from, funnily enough, Compare and Recycle. And Compare and Recycle say, good afternoon, Vanilla Web. We're actually finalists in the Innovation and Customer Service Awards at the Mason Awards tonight as well. And we've got an exciting day ahead. I have a fabulous Business Bunker show. Really interesting listening in. So thank you for that.
Brilliant.
That was... do you know them?
No.
No. Okay. And then we've got... Oh, Venom Tech. Venom Tech have been on with the Venom of the Day. So, Toxin Tuesday, they've said, Venom of the Day is a black-necked spitting cobra. Okay? As it's the venom we use for the majority of our study with Dr. Moshos and Dr. Carol Trim and others to show viable microbes in venom. I think I know what that all means. But it's a spitting cobra, and there's a picture of it, and it looks evil, basically.
Venom Tech do a great line in alternative Christmas presents.
Mm-hmm.
I think last year it was tarantulas, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
So that you could buy a dead, obviously, tarantula in a nice showcase box.
You could.
That you could hang on your wall at home, in your bedroom, for example.
Yeah.
Somewhere appropriate.
As
like
you
that.
Want to, above the bed. Yeah.
And they
so that when you wake up in the middle of the night, Jenny, and you look up, you go, oh my God, it's tarantula.
Yeah. They were ever so reasonable as well, weren't
they? They were very, very reasonably priced.
I don't know if they managed to get rid of them all or not, but look out for those this Christmas.
I mean, they were recycling tarantulas, basically.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
Can I mention Headcorn Aerodrome?
No.
Because, well, I'm going to.
No, go on.
I'm sorry, I'm going to. Because, as we know, it is set in the heart of beautiful Kent.
It is.
What I love about summer in this country, and I think there's no better place to be than England in the summer. It is absolutely gorgeous. And what we are so good at is running all these wonderful local events. And Headcorn Aerodrome has got loads happening this year. So, let's start with the Battle of Britain Air Show on the 30th and the 1st of July. Now, I don't know, I mean, where we live, Jenny, we're used to having the Herne Bay Air Show, which I believe has been cancelled this year. Because, well, they can't police it, they're saying, effectively. Not because of the planes flying around, but because it's a mass gathering of people and they can't guarantee people's security should some idiot want to come along and cause a problem.
Well, so, mind you, we had a nice plane crash last year, didn't we?
Yeah, but it ditched in the sea and the guy got out okay.
He did,
but
luckily.
It's been cancelled for a completely different reason. And I'm so glad you're here because we're going to get into some of those health and safety kind of concerns and has it all gone a bit mad when we interview you in a minute. But so they've got a Battle of Britain Air Show 30th and the 1st of July, which will be fantastic. Sorry, 30th of June and 1st of July. Which will be brilliant. I'm sure they'll have the Battle of Britain Memorial flight there, which is Lancaster Spitfire Hurricane, I believe, isn't it? They've got a combined ops, military and air show on the 18th and 19th of August, which will be huge amounts of fun. And then in September, they've got a Southern model show happening there as well. So great example of some wonderful little local events that
absolutely
are happening.
And they're all good fun. Do get along to them. We're going to have to jolly things along because we've got two fabulous guests that we want to talk to still. We've got loads of tweets, loads of emails, and Martin's on a rant.
Not on a rant at all. I'm just celebrating the cultural diversity that we have in this country.
That's been cancelled.
Headcorn Aerodrome haven't cancelled their air show. It's still going ahead.
It's just Herne Bay.
Yeah.
I've had a tweet from Wildwood Media. And Wildwood Media say, Vanilla Web, hi Paul. We're very proud to be finalists tonight in the Creative Agency Award. We were proud winners of the Startup Award last year and we're really looking forward to the award tonight. So well done again, Wildwood Media, and I'll see you guys later. I need to tell you about a couple of other things and then we're going to talk to our next guest. Kenwood Trust is one of the Vicar's Picnic's named charities this year. And with acts from Star Sailor and Fun Loving Criminals, this is not an event to be missed. To get your tickets, you go to vicarspicnic.co.uk/tickets. The Vicar's Picnic is a festival held in Yalden in Mid Kent, and it's coming up in the summer. And a lot of the proceeds are going towards the fabulous folks at Kenwood Trust, which is a residential home for people with drink and drug addiction problems. So do support that.
Half price spa days.
I beg your pardon?
Half price spa days.
Go on.
Eastwell Manor.
Really?
Yeah, up until the 13th of July. So £39.50 for a full day at Eastwell Manor Spa, including lunch. So use of all the facilities, go to as many classes as you want, have a dip in the pool, inside or out, they've got one of each. What fantastic value. So if you need to chill out, take some time out from your business, get yourself along to Eastwell Manor.
Fantastic. The future of digital marketing. Come to our free Google marketing event on the 10th of July at Fruitworks. It's an exclusive live stream for Google partners, AM Marketing. And it's a totally free event, so get along to that.
Great.
Also, it's 10th of July, 4:30 to 6:30. And if you go to partnerevents.withgoogle.com, AM Marketing, you can find out all about it. That's partnerevents.withgoogle.com at AM Marketing. So check it out.
Is there anybody out there still worried about GDPR?
I'm sure there should be.
We touched on it briefly earlier.
What a government, for a start, because they've just breached it.
What have they been up to?
Well, didn't you say Damian Collins and his DCMS committee went and actually put a photograph of Aaron Banks's passport on Twitter, which wasn't a clever idea, really. That's a clear breach of GDPR, isn't it?
Well, David Burton from QBH Solutions, who I know Jenny knows, is coming on the show with us in July. You don't know about that yet, Paul, but he is. Take it from me.
Okay.
And
David's been on before, actually.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. So they're Folkestone-based, and they're actually running a complete GDPR support package. Well, they do your audit, do your privacy notice for you, and complete all your kind of processes and procedures around that. And they're doing that for £449. So if you are worried about it and you haven't done anything about it, there's always that option, I would suggest.
Fantastic. Good stuff. I've had an email from Trudy Hartridge at Young Enterprise. And she says, would it be possible to give us a shout out on the show, please? I'm looking for volunteers and I'm really struggling. I've got two programs that I need to fill. One at Kent College on Tuesday the 3rd of July. It's a launch pad. And one at the Tower School, Ashford, on Wednesday the 18th of July, which is also a launch pad. We're working with year 9 and 10 students. I'm available to meet up and run through the programs beforehand with anybody that wants to volunteer. We're looking, so they're looking for people to help out. So people with business experience to help out at Kent College. And I take it that's the Kent College in Tunbridge Wells, or it might be the Kent College in Canterbury, I don't know. No, it'll be Kent College in Canterbury, because she looks after that part of Kent. East Kent. So that'll be Kent College, Canterbury, or the Towers School in Ashford. If anybody out there can help in July with either of those, please get in touch with Trudy. Her email address is Trudy, T-R-U-D-I-E. Hartridge, H-A-R-T-R-I-D-G-E, at y-e.org.uk. They're also looking for board members for the Ashford and North East Young Enterprise Board. Meet about once a month, helping the students in East Kent schools to achieve employability and enterprise skills. Young Enterprise is brilliant. They also have a thing called a Tenor Challenge, which is fantastic fun.
Do we know who won the Kent final? Young Enterprise?
I know who the runners-up were. It was King's Canterbury.
Right.
And I can't remember who the winners were. That's appalling, because I chaired the event and I announced it, and I can't remember who it was, but they both gone on to the South and South East final. Mm. I only remember that King's were runners-up because my kids went to King's, so that kind of stuck with me. But,
Okay. I was judging Roger Manwood's and Astor College this year in Sandwich.
It might have been Roger Manwood that won, actually.
Oh, really?
It might well have been.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know what their business idea was?
I can't remember.
A bug recipe book.
That's it, yeah.
So talking about kind of sustainability and kind of alternative food and all that kind of stuff and recycling, I guess it kind of fits into that. So at some point in the near future, we're going to be mass producing bugs. Could be worms, could be cockroaches, could be anything.
Crickets are already a big business.
Crickets.
In California, they're cricket farms.
But they're incredibly expensive at the moment, so they're not as widely available as they need to be for us to be able to substitute things like flour in our cupcake recipes. But mark my words, it's only a few years away.
The Dutch use crickets in place of peanuts when there are peanut allergies, because roasted crickets taste the same as peanuts.
But the nutritional value is the important thing here. It's not the taste. They don't really taste of anything. They just taste of
peanuts. They taste of
grit and powder. But the nutritional value is very high in protein. So insects are the way forward.
Termites are big in Africa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. we're kind of fast running out of time. We've got two guests to talk to.
Stop talking then. Get on with it.
Yep. So I think we ought to talk to our next guest. What do you reckon?
Yes.
Go on then. Introduce them.
Are we having Jenny or are we having Tushar?
You pick.
Right, okay, Tushar. We're going to move along the line. So Tushar runs a company called Majimoto.
Yep.
And they are LED lighting and energy saving specialists. So Tushar, tell us all about Majimoto and what you're all about.
Well, first of all, you might wonder why Majimoto. Well, the interesting thing is Majimoto in Kiswahili means hot water, and there is also a geothermal spring from where they generate electricity called Majimoto in Kenya. So, hence the name.
And it's Swahili, did you say?
Yes.
When I was at school, which wasn't very long because I didn't go very often, but we had a science teacher and he could speak Swahili. And when he got really angry, he used to shout at you in Swahili, which made no difference because we wouldn't take any notice of him. That's interesting. Cool.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So basically, Majimoto is into mainly LED lighting, but also in infrared heating and instantaneous water heating. All these technologies are in a way to reduce energy consumption. And with the instantaneous water heating, it also reduces water consumption. Now, we've been at it for quite a few years. And we are a Carbon Trust accredited supplier. Now, I'll tell you a little bit about grants that are available for SMEs for conversion or retrofitting lighting, infrared heating, or instantaneous water heating from existing technologies. Now, we are able to get 40% from Locase, which is Low Carbon Kent, which is EU money, and an additional 15% for Carbon Trust. Now, Carbon Trust is private money, so there is no conflict of interest. So you can get both. And the only thing is that the Carbon Trust grants are only available from accredited suppliers, of which we are one.
Right.
And in fact, in last year, out of a panel of 180-odd accredited suppliers nationally, we came first equal with two other suppliers.
So let's just recap on that quickly. So are we saying that up to 55% of the capital cost of converting your lighting system to LED can actually be funded through grant support?
Correct.
Gosh, that's incredible, isn't it?
It is, and like so many of these government schemes, not enough people know about it. And that's one of the biggest problems, is the lack of information, and people just don't know about it. And I don't know this for sure, but I kind of suspect that quite often now, and you will confirm or tell me I'm wrong with this, Tisha. I would imagine, though, that a lot of people, if you tell them, oh, you can get grant funding for this, they're going, yeah, you're just saying that. Do you find that, you know, people don't always believe that you can actually get this?
I do indeed. When we talk about 55%, first of all, there is incredulity.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
And basically, they don't believe it.
Yeah.
That's the first hurdle, so to speak. The second hurdle is, they say grants, but it'll take forever and it's very complicated. Well, the thing is, it's all fairly straightforward, as some of my customers will tell you quite happily. It's a very straightforward procedure, but we do most of the work anyway. So
it's not a regional growth fund type scenario where the whole thing goes off to a big firm of accountants in London and they put their business plan heads on and then throw it back and say, no, it's rubbish, you're not having it, and then it goes back again. It's quite a fast turnaround.
It's a very, very straightforward procedure, and Locase are actually would bend over backwards to help the client anyway. So, and we are well regarded by both Low Carbon Kent and Carbon Trust, and both are separate applications, but they're straightforward. There's nothing complicated about it.
And with my cynical hat on, I guess you could say that part of the reason why our divorce bill from the EU is so big is because we've all funded initiatives like low carbon, over the years. Mm. And if we're not taking advantage of it, it's a bit like the apprenticeship levy. It's money just going down the pan, isn't it? We're all paying for it, so why not use it?
Yep. Well, this is it. If you speak to Low Carbon Kent, they also are sometimes frustrated by the lack of interest. Mm. Because, let me tell you, give you some financial facts, okay? After grants, in most of the cases that we have handled, you're looking at 2 to 3 year payback.
Mm.
Now, which investment gives you a 50 to 33% return on your investment without hassle? It's it's there. And that's not even counting maintenance savings, the improvement in your surroundings so that you get the correct level of light. Because quite often when we retrofit lights, we find that the old lights are past their sell-by date.
Yeah.
There isn't even sufficient lighting. And the improvement in productivity that you can get by having the right level of lighting, the right level of heating, and the right level of ambience.
You're absolutely right. I suspect, and again, I'll be interested in your views on this, Fisher, is I rent a number of offices, yeah? I don't own any of the offices, and I have leases on all of them. So the lighting and the infrastructure are handled by the landlord, okay? The electricity bills are paid by me. So the landlord couldn't care less because they're not paying the bills and they don't want to invest in the capital infrastructure because it's of no benefit to them personally. So many of them ignore this for exactly that reason. They go, well, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to save any money because it's them that are paying the bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. And therefore, I don't want to expend any capital in developing the building. That's very short-sighted because it's their asset at the end of the day. Yeah. But so many landlords operate like that.
Why don't you look at it from the point of view of you as the bill payer?
Because
and how much money you're going to save on your bill?
No, because I'm not going to save it because my lease is short. My lease runs out in 3 years' time. I've just put all new lights in and they're going to go, you're either going to treble your rent or they're going to give the building to somebody else. So I'm not going to invest in it either.
But you're not looking at it on a 3 year basis, surely, something like Fruitworks. You must be looking at it at least on a 10, 15 years ahead basis.
Yeah, but I haven't got a lease for 10 or 15 years. I've got a lease for three.
Yeah.
I understand where you're coming from. I think personally, a view has to be taken.
Mm.
I know for a fact that the landlord will not be interested because there is nothing in it for them.
Exactly, yeah.
But for you as a tenant, if you have a plan that, okay, we're going to stay here at least 3 years, if not more, then there is a return for you at the end.
Yeah.
Now, that is the problem. Quite often what happens is, I know of many situations where tenants have a 3 year lease, but they keep on renewing the lease every 3 years anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But the problem is, and I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here, because I agree with you. And if I was the landlord, I would invest in it because it's a great investment for the asset. And this is where it's going wrong. But as a tenant, it's really difficult because I can't guarantee that they're going to write me a new lease. I want to stay where I am, but I can't guarantee they're going to write me a new lease. If I put my money into their asset, the only thing they're going to do is put my rent up, you know, and therefore I lose my saving. I'll give you a classic example. We've got a gas boiler. It must be 30 years old. It breaks down every winter 5 times. The company that comes to repair it say the same thing every time. It will be cheaper to buy a new boiler. Yeah. The landlord couldn't care less.
I think that's there's a missed crazy. Opportunity, though, for the landlord, because it's a real selling point.
Exactly.
I think if you can, as business owners within that facility, group together and take a case to the landlord and show them this is something that they can use to market their business. Like when you rent office space for us, this is a green space.
Yeah.
There's energy efficiency savings here. It will get them the better clients. It will get them more business long term.
Exactly.
And they can start looking at changing the rates that they charge for their services.
Yeah, exactly. That's where the opportunity is. And also, office lighting, as you kind of touched on, Tisha, is a very poignant topic at the moment. You know, for a long time, we've had very harsh lighting in buildings, and that's put eye strain on people. You know, because people use computers and all of that all the time, the type of lighting you've got in a building is very important in terms of the ambience of where you work.
Yeah, what you are talking about is called glare.
Yeah.
Now, the recommended level of glare rating in office space is under 90. UGR has to be under 19. Now, these are the technical bits that I don't want to bore you with. But what happens is, typically with LED lighting now, you are removing a lot of glare from computer screens.
Exactly, yeah.
That's one thing. But interestingly, we just in Canterbury, we did a very interesting office where the whole room was occupied by designers. And they had their computer screens horizontal. So they were working with pens.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And you had the
sketch pads and stuff.
Yeah, so even LED panels weren't very good. So we had to design lighting which actually threw the light up into the ceiling and diffused it.
Tisha refitted their Lombard house.
Oh, okay. That needed doing as well.
Well, they're showing at the moment with our current analysis a 12-month payback.
That's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, because in facilities like office spaces or co-working spaces or whatever, the hours the lights are long on is a very long time.
Mm.
So therefore, the return gets quicker.
Mm. Yeah.
And as I said, we've got the energy data.
Absolutely.
And they are showing a one-year payback.
Yeah.
The nice thing about what T-Shirt does, I think, as well, is, you know, what they'll do is they'll visit an office and they'll do the whole analysis.
Mm.
And they'll look at the existing lighting and they'll look at replacement with, superior LED lighting.
Yeah.
And then they'll do that whole ROI calculation for you before you commit either way.
Yep.
So you've got the numbers, so you can say, actually, yes, it does make business sense for us to do it that way.
Absolutely.
And if you don't want to pay for it up front as well...
And presumably, you can point them at the grants that are available to help do it too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The thing is, with our analysis, it's a very deep analysis, showing them... pretty granular as well, down to light fitting, as to what kind of savings they can expect. And it is all based on the amount of money they pay for electricity and all that as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
And it's financed through the savings. That's the point.
Yeah,
you don't
absolutely.
Actually have to even spend any money at all in the first instance.
Absolutely. And it's there's also capital allowances to be had if you own a building. So, absolutely, yeah.
Well, the other thing about LED lighting is, of course, you get enhanced capital allowances, which means you can write off all the investment in 1 year.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
For tax purposes.
Absolutely, yeah.
So,
no, absolutely. You know, I despair of landlords that don't do it. I really do. I really do. And it's laziness and the fact that they don't really care that somebody else is paying the bill.
The other thing is also with manufacturing companies and with warehousing and what have you, is that a lot of customers are now demanding your environmental credentials. So obviously, if you have retrofitted LED lighting and all that, it's showing that you are... reducing your carbon
absolutely.
Footprint. And we've done plenty of factories that way.
And at the end of the day, though, you know, for all of that that you've said, which is all great stuff about money saving and stuff, for me, the best advantage is the quality of the light that you're going to get. That's the biggest advantage, is that it's a much more pleasant environment to work in. Mm. The lighting is much better. It's longer lasting. You don't change the bulbs every 10 minutes. There's a whole heap of advantages to it outside the financial advantages of doing it. Absolutely.
And there's lots of supporting evidence for productivity gains and how, you know, people going off sick and all the rest of it, of course.
But I'd also like to add another thing is also not all LED lighting is the same.
Sure.
There are different qualities and that, you know, some will demonstrate flicker, but all our product is at the highest level of quality.
Cool. I'm sorry to cut you short, but we're running out of time, and we also want to talk to Jenny. Tisha, thank you so much for that. If people want to find out more about Mojito Limited, what's the best way to do that?
Well, It's www.majimoto.co.uk.
Cool.
And
you're on the Twitter at Majimoto Limited,
I believe. Majimoto Limited.
Yeah.
And of course, we've got a Facebook page as well. Mm-hmm. And sales@majimoto.co.uk.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that, Tricia. The links to all that are on the Kent Business Radio website, and again, they'll stay on there forever. So show 383, that's where all the details will be if you want to find out more about this. And I'm sure you do, and I'm sure you want to talk to Tricia about this, and I'm sure you want to be pointed about how you get your grant funding to help you do this. For the moment, thank you so much for joining us. I've got billions of tweets coming in now. I've got emails, and we've actually got a guest that we want to talk to more than any of that. So I'm just going to try and fly through a couple of quick tweets before we talk to Jenny. Slope-off Friday's coming up again. It's going to take place at a Poet at Matfield once more, having had such a good event last time. If you want to find out more about it, just tweet Slope-off Friday. F-Keys, Kent-based businesses, call for your free two-hour Office 365 productivity taster. Follow them on the Twitter, find out all about it. It's F-Keys is their Twitter handle. Click Events UK. Paul, can I have a shout out, please? We're running an express networking event on the 5th of July, 10 a.m. upstairs in the heart of Flavour, King Street, Maidstone. Book through Eventbrite. Really appreciate your help. Thank you very much. Follow them on the event on the Twitter. Click Events UK is their Twitter handle. Higher Elevation Business Bunker, we're finalists in the awards tonight for customer service. Can't wait to meet everybody. So, and Stephen from CBS for Kent, please give me a shout out. Looking for merchant service providers to add to my business and business partnership. Give my future clients better value for money. So, CBS number 4 Kent, follow him on the Twitter and find out what that's all about. And Oasis have said, we would love a shout out, please, for our roundtable session on Tuesday, the 3rd of July, at our office in Y. We will be discussing how business monitor and manage employee absenteeism. Free places can be booked online. Follow them on the Twitter, O_A_SYS. Sue Tappenden has been on. Tony Hughes, confidential waste destruction for small businesses is brilliant. Such a relief if you have confidential stuff to dispose of. Thank you so much. Really good and much needed. So thank you for that. We got dozens more coming in. Sorry. Jen Taylor. Hi, Paul. Business Bunker would love a shout out for networking lunch this Thursday, the 28th, 12 to 2 p.m. at Cote Brasserie in Sevenoaks. So sorry to rush through those, but I want to talk to Jenny, really. It's an absolute pleasure now to welcome Jenny to the show.
Thank you.
Why don't you kick off by telling us about you?
So my business is Sanford Hodges. We're a health, safety and environment consultancy. I wanted to talk to you a little bit today more about the health and safety side of things, because I think there's a bit of a misconception about what us health and safety consultants are all about.
It's everybody's favourite excuse, isn't it? Well, you can't do that because of health and safety.
It's not got the best name for itself.
No, but it's not the industry. It's the people that abuse it.
I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. Historically, we've been very good at telling people they're not doing their job right, which is completely inappropriate. Mm. You know, the people that are running their businesses are highly skilled people, you know, who are there running a business successfully. It's not our job to tell them they don't know their job. So we haven't been very good at facilitating, which is where we really should be. But also, I think sometimes health and safety is used as a reason not to do something. And there is, believe it or not, very few things that you can't do due to health and safety. If you risk assess something and you have an acceptable level of risk that you're prepared to wear and that you have mitigated adequately, there's very few things that you can't do. So I think that's where some of the myths have come about.
Yeah. You do get it. I mean, it's normally a job's worth somewhere that has nothing to do with health and safety that uses it. And what was the other big one that they used to come out with as a reason that you couldn't do it? I can't remember. But there was always another big thing that they'd come out with. You know, you can't do that because of, it was originally data protection. Oh, you know, data protection doesn't allow you to do that.
I think it's an easy scapegoat.
Yeah, it was just a scapegoat because most of them didn't even, you know, not what the rules were in the first place. Talking to us about what you guys do, step me through how you do what you do, who your clients are, what kind of projects you undertake.
Okay, so we'll work with any small to medium-sized business that doesn't require a full-time health and safety professional within their organisation. Many businesses don't. We have clients ranging from arborists, we've got pubs, we've a whole variety.
Beauty salon? Is that
yes, thing? Beauty salon as well, we do some work with. I've got someone else who's a drainage guy who's, again, another small business, but very skilled individual who needs some assistance. And I think there's a bit of confusion with small businesses about what the legal requirements are. So basically, there is a requirement that if you have five or more employees, you must have a written health and safety policy. Yes. This is what we all know as a health and safety management system.
Sorry to interrupt. Is that something that you can help people put together?
So we can help you put that together, but it's very much a case of having to be part of your organisation and come in and work with you so that we can get the biggest bang for the buck. Because at the end of the day, if we work with you to come up with a solution, you own it, you will use it, you will value it.
And you understand it.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, here's where it gets a bit tricky. So if you have less than five employees, and this does include directors as well for anyone that's a little bit unsure, yes, you don't need a written health and safety policy, but you do still have to have a health and safety policy. So it's very difficult for somebody to be able to justify what they're doing and document what they're doing without having documentation in place.
So I was going to say, there's no point. You might as well write it down. If you're going to have one, why not write it down? It's not going to take you 10 minutes, is it?
Exactly. So it is really important that we're documenting stuff, because then we've got a defendable case in the court of law should something go wrong. The other advantage of that, of course, is as well, if it's written down, we've got documentation we can look back on, such that if we're unsure of something or there's a part of the business where we don't do something particularly frequently, it might be a task that's not done every day. If you're doing that task again and you think, oh, I can't quite remember the correct safe working method for doing this, you've still got the safe system of work to go back on. So we work with small businesses and medium-sized businesses to facilitate this. We'll come in and we'll do a free assessment of where they are. We can work using the existing documentation they've got or set everything up from scratch with them.
Okay. I know it's quite a large field and it's quite diverse, and it will obviously depend on what kind of business you're in. But what can you give us a feel, Jenny, for just some of the areas? In a run-of-the-mill kind of office environment, so you're not doing anything stupid like crushing discs or, you know, with heavy-duty machinery or whatever. In a fairly run-of-the-mill, service-based office environment, what are the kind of elements that you would look at that go towards making up a reasonable health and safety policy?
Well, I think the first thing that you have to do, and it doesn't matter what organisation you're in really, is you have to start with your risk assessment. If you haven't identified your hazards, and this is where many health and safety systems fall down, if you haven't identified your hazards, you can't assess the risk, you can't mitigate the risk. So 9 times out of 10, when something goes wrong, somebody hasn't assessed the risk. Now, with offices, it's fairly straightforward. You need to have a statement of intent, which shows your commitment to health and safety, keeping your employees safe, providing adequate welfare. This is all the things like lighting, which we talked about earlier on, hot and cold running water, drinking facilities, toilets, etc. But you've also got to look at things like display screen equipment, slips, trips and falls.
Cables going across floors.
I mean, honestly, the things you see, manual handling is also a big one. And people always roll their eyes when I talk about manual handling, because everyone knows what manual handling is. You know, we all know it. But it's one of the things that we actually, all of us, fail on so often. So for something that we all know about and something that should be so ingrained in us, as creatures of habits, we all like to cut corners. And manual handling can often be a big problem for office-based roles, especially where they've got filing and document destruction and stuff like that, where they're moving stuff around.
Not something that applies to you, Paul. You don't even get your lawnmower out, do you?
Absolutely. I don't move.
That's an alien concept.
I don't move. I'm perfectly safe, me. I just sit in an armchair.
I will say this. I am on a one-woman mission to try and tell people about not mowing in their flip-flops. I have numerous friends who may be listening, who know who they are and shall remain nameless. Please, Don't even wear
flip flops.
Oh, good lord!
No, just bare feet.
It makes me shudder. Yeah. It makes me shudder.
Yeah. If you've got one of those old style Flomos, petrol driven ones.
Luckily, I never cut my grass, so it doesn't affect me.
They will have your toes off. But didn't you mention something as well recently about barbecues? Didn't you put a post on a while back about barbecues?
A lot of the time, you know, we can be relatively confident that we're thinking about safety in the workplace. I think most of us are pretty on the ball with it. But many of us forget it when we leave work and we go home. The number of people that get injured by people putting basically petrol or any other kind of
liquid. I saw one the other day. You know these chimeras or whatever they are? Somebody tried to light that by pouring a gallon of petrol down the front when it was already alight. Yeah. It went off like a bomb because it's encased.
Honestly,
it's a shell.
It's completely scary. Yeah.
But we all do it. I mean...
Do we?
you might, I don't.
Do we?
I like to think most of the time I'm pretty safe.
But garden rubbish is the classic one, isn't it? We all buy those kind of incinerator dustbins and we expect it to just light and burn, but of course it doesn't because it's all wet. So then you pour a load of petrol on it and that doesn't work, so you pour a bit more.
Or some other random household items that you come across that we really shouldn't be burning. So.
But I think what's really interesting for me, because I've got a friend that works in the industry as an in-house health and safety manager, is how many businesses, particularly businesses that have gone through high growth, are blissfully unaware of the fact that they are flouting the law on a kind of almost a minute-by-minute basis. Mm. And this friend of mine, a good example, he was telling me the other day, won't name names, but he was telling me that they'd had a delivery. A big lorry had turned up to deliver some stuff to the factory. And they were unloading it in the street on a forklift that had no licence. Mm. In other words, you know, it's only supposed to be used within the confines of the workplace. It was on a public road, you know, and there you go. I mean, if they had an accident...
I'm evil. You must have all have seen the Facebook video of the geezer with a pallet lifting truck thing. Have you not seen it? He's unloading the back of a lorry and he's got a stack of things on it, but he gets to the edge of the tailboard and all of a sudden it goes and it flips him straight over and lands on his face. That makes me laugh every... I know I shouldn't. It makes me laugh every time how he managed to do that.
It's one of those things that I think, if you know in hindsight the person's okay, you can have a little bit of a giggle about it, but... By the same token, you know, these are completely avoidable incidents. I mean, this is why I went into health and safety. I mean, I started environmental management, but I soon realised that really people have to come first. You know, no one should go to work and come home with an injury or worse. No. It just shouldn't happen.
But if your car isn't taxed and insured, you know you can't take it on the road. Mm. What makes you think you can take a forklift truck on a public highway and start unloading a lorry? Mm. You know?
Yeah. People's thought processes are often not the same, though. So with stuff that's going on at work, especially with a business that's rapidly expanding, you know, their immediate thoughts are, have we got the infrastructure in terms of IT and hardware? Have we got enough desk spaces? Mm-hmm. Have we got support from HR to be able to help us grow this business? And you see it time and time again that quite often health and safety is forgotten about until something happens. And the problem is, once something does happen, there's two things.
Late.
First of all, it's too late. Someone's already been injured or there's been a very serious near miss. Second of all, your business has been damaged by that reputation. And closing the stable door after the horse is bolted is not the best way to manage your business.
Exactly. Your trouble is you see this so often, though, don't you? And it's this short-termism all the time.
Yeah.
It's like I have loads of conversations with people about insurance. Yeah, are you insured? Nah. Why? Well, it's expensive. It's not as expensive as if you get a claim against you, you know, or something goes wrong. Yeah, well, it should be all right. You know, and that's... you know, there's far too much of that goes on that goes, oh, no, we'll deal with that later, it'll be okay. Because most of these things are just seen as a distractive overhead. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the risk assessment is so important.
Of course it is.
But it's an educational thing as much as anything else. By going, do you realise how dangerous that is? And people go, never thought about it, really.
Well, to try and put value on what health and safety consultants do, just to give you an idea, for every pound of insured cost that you can insure against, there are it's estimated between £8 and £36 of uninsured costs.
Yeah.
So that's cost directly to the business that you can't claim back from. That could be anything from fines through to lost time due to incident investigation, It's replacing your staff. You're having to go through that recruitment process again.
Compensation
you can insure to a point. But I mean, even things like, okay, you can employ another Joe Bloggs. Well, guess what? The next Joe Bloggs you get doesn't know your business as well as the previous Joe Bloggs. Yeah, exactly. So it's not just their level of training and experience, it's how well they know your business. And if you have somebody within your business who's key, why would you want to lose them?
So what would be a practical approach for a small business employing? The minimum is...
So for a written health and safety policy, the minimum requirement is 5 employees.
Okay. So I've got a 5-person business. My business is servicing photocopiers and leasing of office equipment. What would be a kind of a reasonable process to go through in terms of identifying risks and creating...
So what I would suggest you do is I would always recommend getting somebody in who's a professional who can help you with this. But before you even start that process, so that you've got something to come to the table with, start identifying the hazards you see yourself. So hazards are things with the potential to cause harm. So you want to be looking for those hazards and listing them down, what the consequences are from those hazards, and where you think you can mitigate them. You've then got a talking point and a starting point, because nobody understands your business better than you.
So it could be a fire extinguisher that's blocking an exit, emergency exit door.
It could be, or the classic one is where we've picked the fire extinguisher up to hold open the fire doors. One of my personal favourites.
Hey, how about this? I once went into a fire station, and guess what they had propping the door open?
Fire extinguisher.
A fire extinguisher.
Identify the hazards. That's a kind of a no-brainer, isn't it?
The very, very basics of what you need to, before you write any policy or procedure, because what procedures do you need? You don't know until you've identified your hazards. And we're talking significant hazards here. So, you know, another classic one that I always get told is, we need a COSH assessment for Tipex. So I'll say something, are you a Tipex manufacturer, a Tipex distributor? No, we've just got some Tipex in the office. I'm like, well, how much have you got? And it'll turn out to be 4 or 5 bottles. Do you need a COSH assessment for that? No, you don't.
We're getting into some technical kind of certification.
Control of substances hazardous to health.
Okay,
so any substance that's hazardous to health, if you hold it in enough quantities, and depending on what you're doing with it, so again, a Tipex manufacturer or distributor, yes, they would have a COSH assessment because the sheer volume that they're
chemicals,
holding.
Chemicals, anything like
yes.
that.
Yes.
Yeah. Not bleach in the toilet.
Yeah.
Unless you're someone who owns a cleaning business and that's holding
and
vast quantities
of it. And you've got a huge supplies
of it.
Yeah.
So there's COSH, control of...
Substances hazardous to health.
Right. And then there's IOSH, is that right? What is IOSH?
So IOSH is the Institute of Occupational Safety and Health. They are a governing body for health and safety professionals. I am a member of IOSH. They're basically there to help us as safety professionals to be the best we can be. They do have a code of conduct, which all members adhere to. It's also a great way for someone like myself to be able to be surrounded by other professionals, because that's how we learn more. So we're always looking to continually improve our knowledge, basically so we can help you guys.
Right, okay.
Do you like what I did there?
No, Paul, it went totally above our heads like it normally does.
I said, gosh, she's from IOSH, she can help you with your gosh.
Oh,
that's good,
very
isn't it?
Droll.
We can always rely on you to bring it down. And
exactly, bring it down to the lowest common denominator. We've only got a couple of minutes left, Jenny. The thing that struck me more than anything about what you've said is about this 5 employees or more needed a written policy. But to my mind, why wouldn't you have a written policy anyway? Even if there was only a couple of you might as well.
You may as well. And if you've got clients who... I'll require you to have it, would be another reason to have it. It can also lower your insurance premiums, and it's the right thing to do. If it's written,
exactly.
If you've got some written documentation, it does help you. Mm-hmm. Documents alone don't keep you safe. Mm-hmm. You need communication. That's a two-way process, so you're actually consulting with your employees, but it does help.
Absolutely.
It really does help.
Having identified the hazards, you can then create individual, what are they called, the risk assessments.
So you can create...
So how do you manage that hazard in your business?
So basically what you're doing is you're looking at the hazard, you're finding out what the consequence is. So the hazard could be trailing cables, consequence could be slips, trips and falls. How do we manage that? Right. Well, we're going to make sure that we haven't got cables along the front of doorways and stuff. That
or hazard
gonna be,
tape or something.
They can be taped down, they can be run across the ceiling, you can have them in cable trays. Along the backs of desks. Once you've mitigated that risk,
You can then prove there's a paper trail. So if something happens, most importantly, this is what we did to identify and this is what we did to mitigate it.
Yes.
And it still happened, but, you know, that's always
going to
be the case.
The most important thing is if you've mitigated the risk,
right,
the chances are you're going to be okay.
Prosecuted.
Absolutely. Right.
So
sensible advice.
Absolutely. Very sensible advice. And you need to talk to Jenny, please, everyone. We've kind of run out of time.
No worries.
Give us a quick shout if people want to find out more about you and what you do.
You can find us online on www.sandfordhodges.com via email. That's inquiries@sandfordhodges.com. Or give us a call on 01843 639 711.
Twitter at Sandford Hodges.
At Sandford Hodges HSE.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Thank you.
Jenny, thank you so much for that. Sorry to rush you at the end there. As always, all of these links are on this are on the Kent Business Radio website, show page, show number 383. For the moment, Jenny, thank you so much for that.
Thank you for having me.
An interesting subject that we all need to take far more awareness of. That brings us to the end of another show. So thank you so much. I want to say a huge thank you to our three guests, Mr. Tony Hughes of Confidential Document Destruction, Tusha Raja of Mojimoto Lighting, and obviously Jenny Sanford of Sanford Hodges. Thank you so much. On Friday, our sister show, The Business Bunker Extra Show, presented by Amanda Flanders, on from 11 till 12 on Friday. This week, the co-host is Richard Bell, and their guest is Gail Berry of Blossom and Berry. So do check that out. That's 11 a.m. Friday, The Business Bunker Extra Show. But we've reached the end of another show. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm sorry if I didn't read out your email or tweet.
Information-packed show, Paul.
It was, and there's still loads of tweets and loads of emails that we could have read that we just ran out of time for.
Your
so sorry about that.
Shelter have been on Tenterden toilets.
I have that. I bumped into Laura on Sunday.
She says hello.
Hello, Laura.
She's missing you. Apparently, you don't eat so many kebabs anymore.
No. Well, the thing was, I bumped into her outside of Tesco's on Sunday, and we started to have a conversation, and then I realised the football was about to kick off, so I kind of just ran off. So sorry about that.
That was another joke, wasn't it? The football was about to kick off.
Yeah, it's a pun. See, yeah. Everyone's a pun, mate. Don't let them go past you. Anyway, we're at the end of the show. Thank you so much. And then thank you to Martin for co-hosting this week's show. We'll be back with another Business Bunker show next week. In the interim, have a great week, everyone. I'm looking forward to the Maidstone and Medway Business Awards this evening, and we'll see you all again soon. Bye-bye for now.
Bye, everyone.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.